Hi. Hi. Hi.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Gary Lectus, and you're listening to Silence, issue 292. Yes, Silence, the online downloadable lifestyle magazine show with me, Gary Lectus. And with me tonight is... hello? Hello? No, there's no one there, because the Beast Must Die is a very busy beast, who, unfortunately, cannot spare the time in the tiny, tiny little production window that we have. So, I'm going to attempt to contact some other people out there in the world. Let's see how it goes. Oh, who's this who's just come in virtually into my car of podcasting where it was it's snowing earlier? It's Spare Five. Spare Five, welcome to Silence, issue 292.
Hello.
It's a Spare Five special.
That's right. The host that no one ever wanted back. I'm back. There's nothing you can do about it.
Absolutely, yes. And how are you? You all right?
I'm okay. My back's a bit sore, but I'm all right.
Your back's a bit sore. Is that from nearly killing my son on the big slide at the weekend?
It is. And can I just say that even though I'm in lots of pain, I've definitely handled this a lot better than he did. He was freaking out so much more than I did.
He cried a lot. He was a real pussy about it.
It was actually really scary. I'm very sorry.
No. Yeah, I think as I said to you later in the day, it's really fine. He cried a lot more because I can't remember exactly what it was, but I wasn't putting Panda and Monkey into the bath at the right point or something like that.
No, I
see. So, yeah, you know, the life of the emotional life of a 3-year-old is tumultuous and somewhat melodramatic, and he was fine. And you, boy, did you go down that slide quick.
Yep.
That was great. Yeah.
Like I said at the time, it was a sort of scenario where halfway down, I realised we were going far too quick. And, but then there was no more time to do anything about it. It was, you know, if that slide was like 10 times as long, I may have been able to sort of, you know, slow us down, but there wasn't any chance.
No. And I mean, my immediate thought was I should have been at the bottom to catch him, but you were like you were on a picnic rug with him at the same time. And you're like a sort of unstoppable load of metal and bolts and sophisticated.
Yeah, I would take you out if you tried to stop me.
Yeah. You're like a military grade robot, aren't you? So, Yeah, I might have accidentally triggered the, I don't know, whatever defence mode you go into.
Okay.
You know, when threatened. I don't know. Oh, do you have, like, power-based weapons? Or?
I generally get really mardy when people threaten me. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. I mean, but I'm just assuming you've got actual weapons, be they bullets or plasma beams.
No, just my mitts and my strategic brain.
Your mitts and wits.
Yeah. Yes.
Good. Now, I don't suppose you've read any comics recently.
No, comics for kids, mate.
Yeah.
Actually, I have, so there.
Oh, really? Good.
Yeah, I started reading... Silverfish.
Oh, the David Lapham thing.
Yeah. You actually lent that to me about 6 years ago, I think. And I sort of, it popped back into my brain for the first time in about that time. And I was like, oh, I'll read that again. And I've gone and bought it. And I've gone and read the first bit. And that's about as far as the comics that I've done.
It's a good 80s movie, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's because it was sort of... he was kind of ahead of the curve. I think it was before... Oh, God, what's that guy who did Lost who did that sort of Spielberg... Almost like a Spielberg pastiche about...
J.J. Abrams?
Yeah, yeah. What was that film he did? Had
Super
an
Eight.
Alien in it in kids. Super 8, yeah. I never actually saw that. I think I started watching it and then life happened.
Thoroughly impressed by J.J. Abrams, so I don't think you're missing out on anything.
Yeah, yeah. Although I did hear one person say it was all right the other day.
Really?
Yeah.
A glowing endorsement. It was all right.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought, maybe I'll go back to, maybe I'll revisit it and have an all right time. But yeah, it was sort of ahead of its time. I get that sort of 80s revisionism, a nostalgia, is sort of, it feels a bit done now. But back when Silverfish came out, it was like, oh, this is novel, you know. Yeah,
I agree. I think the it's very much sort of like I said. Like, you know, if anyone doesn't know, presumably everyone knows what it is. But it does play out like a 80s sort of teen plus serial killer kind of vibe. That's the basic plot of it, with lots of sort of fishy imagery.
Yes. And does it do all the things? Does it have like a girl who survives? Because it's been even longer since I read it.
Unhelpfully, I can't remember that. And I've only like the first.
Well, helpfully for you reading it.
Yeah,
I guess
it's like a new experience.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's good. I remember all I remember is thinking, oh, it's not Stray Bullets, but then finding it a very satisfying self-contained experience. I liked it. And I'm glad you're you're revisiting it. That's
yes.
good.
Have you read any comics, Fraser? Sorry, Gary.
not massively, no. I've been drawing a lot. As I think you're aware, I did a drawing of a friend's dog, and he put it on Facebook, and turns out I did a drawing of the right guy's dog because lots of people have now got in touch wanting drawings of them and their dogs in various situations. So I've been spending all my time doing these commissions, which is nice because it's nice to get paid to draw things. But at the same time, it has taken all the time when I haven't been doing my other jobs. and it is a bit like I had one job where I had to draw some superheroes, and initially I was like, wow, like I get to draw some superheroes. I finally get to draw some superheroes. This is, you know, this is kind of great. And someone's paying me to draw some superheroes. And you know, my sort of 8-year old self was like, yeah, you finally did it. And then I started drawing these superheroes. I sort of had to... I'll talk about it here. I'm pretty sure the people I did it for don't listen to silence. I had to put the heads of this family onto various DC superheroes. And so you've got sort of Superman with the head of a middle-aged man, and Wonder Woman with the head of a middle-aged woman, and Cyborg as a sort of teenage white boy.
Okay.
And the dog. The dog's in there as well.
Who's the dog?
As Ace the Bat-Hound.
Oh, I'd have made him Martian Manhunter.
All right, yeah.
But, you know... Yeah,
I didn't... Look, these weren't my choices.
Okay.
And I sort of really didn't enjoy doing it. especially Cyborg, the amount of just the amount of pointless lights and greebling on his costume just makes it a fairly joyless affair. It's just like looking at your reference and going, okay, so that bit goes there and that bit goes there. And
did you sort of think to yourself, oh, I've wasted my life. I've been aspiring to do this since I was eight. And now this is shit. What have I done?
Well, quite the opposite, really. I was like, wow, thank God I didn't waste my life. If I had to draw a Cyborg comic, I would try and finish it very quickly and then never do one ever again.
Cyborg has turned into a giant spring. He's just a spring now. There you go.
That would be good. I mean, really, Cyborg. He's this sort of the most sophisticated technology known to man. So, I mean, just make him look like a bloke. That'd be easier, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Be easier to draw. It'd be a better idea. It'd be more realistic. I mean,
he could
be
Bloke Man.
Yeah, yeah. He could just be called Bloke.
Bloke.
And his arm could turn into a
plane. An arm. Yeah. He turns into a better arm.
Yeah. any number of things. His arm could, you could go really out there and his arm could turn into a leg. That would be, that would be crazy. And maybe his other arm could turn into another leg, and his legs could turn into arms, and his groin could turn into a head, and his head could turn into some genitals. And just like that, he'd look exactly the same, but upside down.
Then he'd send the criminals running in fear.
Yeah, yeah. He'd have to quickly take his pullover off and, put it the right way around.
Yeah,
yeah. He definitely has a pullover. or a jersey. Or maybe, and he could wear different clothes and it would just be more visually interesting than this sort of guy who's essentially naked running around. Yeah, but no, it was having read the Stan Lee biography and the story of Marvel Comics and everybody has some idea of how much credit Jack Kirby never got, and the creators of anything, and Pat Mills as well. Pat Mills is not happy with other people working with his stuff that he's created, although contractually these companies can do what they want. I am sort of more on the side of Alan Moore these days about superheroes.
I actually had a similar thought on a different sort of vein, but I was thinking about Alan Moore today when I was watching a trailer for Jupiter's Legacy on Netflix, or soon to be on Netflix. Have you seen this?
I've read a bit of the comics and then sort of stopped.
Did you do what I did?
I think I heard something that it was going to be turned into a TV show, but I don't have much interest, really.
Well, this is my point. This is my point.
Or time.
I'm kind of at the point where, thinking back, when my first time I encountered Jupiter's Legacy was when the comic first came out, and I bought it because Frank Quitely was the artist, and I thought, oh, this is quite interesting. And I think I bought one issue and read it and thought, yeah, I don't need to read any more of this. And other people I knew read more, and I got the impression that it was just sort of some bog-standard superhero deconstructionism. And back then, I was already a bit bored of that. Hmm. And I don't care to watch a TV show that's doing the same thing. So I'm kind of a bit on Alan Moore with this one, where I think whilst, I don't want to sort of overly side with the all beard about, this is the definitive word on anything, but I do feel that you only need to read Watchmen. And then everything else could be a bit, it could be an interesting take, but they often aren't. They're often just kind of, what if Superman but evil? What if, you know, superheroes but media stars, social media? I don't care anymore. And I'm kind of annoyed that part of my Netflix fee is going towards this. It's kind of making me think I don't want to give them money anymore.
Yeah. I mean, well, I feel particularly smug in that I pay for Netflix, like a lot of people. But I can't remember the last thing I actually watched on Netflix, but still that £7 a month or whatever it is comes out of my account, and that's great. Just so I can have the possibility of watching
something good.
Something that I don't like. I love Queer Eye, obviously.
Is that on there?
Yeah, Queer Eye. Yeah, I like Queer Eye. Yes, me and Lady Lactus. It's a good bit of wind down light entertainment at the end of the day. And you know, you can get some good fashion tips there.
That's good.
Some good hair care tips. It's a nice space to be in, I think. It's a nice sort of, I see it as a sort of non-toxic space to inhabit.
Refreshing.
You know, better than the news, and better than actually, because quite often it's even better than Neighbours, you know.
That's a glowing endorsement from you.
Yeah. Is there anything else you like that you've seen or consumed in some way?
I watched recently, Psycho 2, the sequel to Psycho. Yeah, I had a really good time with that. And not in the way that I have a good time with horror films that are most people would regard as a bit shit anyway. I actually think that Psycho 2 is worth a watch by people that wouldn't normally, or might assume that it is just some trite cashing. It definitely is cashing in, but it's also stands by itself quite well.
Mm-hmm.
Does really well at.
When was it? When was it? It was made. In the 80s, wasn't it made like long, long after?
Yeah, and that's kind of interesting in and of itself. Like, it reminded me of when, you know, when everyone started getting really excited when Twin Peaks was going to come back 25 years later as a continuation. Like, that, it kind of reminded me of that in a way, that, like, there's such a large distance of time had gone by and they'd made, you know, it's continuous stories, and the idea is that it's not just like a reimagining or, new actors, it's Anthony Perkins as Norman Bates. They reconstruct the, I presume it's a reconstruction of the sets and such, and it's got characters from the original. I didn't look up whether it was the original actors. I wouldn't be surprised if it was, though. But it's got, like, Marion Crane, who's the...
You mean it's not a real hotel where a dangerous transsexual lives? Where a dangerous and threatening transsexual...
It was Bates Motel, and, they don't really deal with the trans issue and a lot, which I guess, with modern perspective, would probably be a better way of evaluating it, which isn't the way I did, which I'll admit that there is probably hugely, in fact, there definitely is hugely problematic things with that story that I don't want to gloss over or ignore, but there's definitely more qualified people out there who are capable of dissecting a film on those terms. I just really liked what they did in terms of the sort of homages they were doing. I was surprised at how much of the original film they were able to sort of recontextualise and put into their sequel in a way that didn't feel expressly like they were ripping something off. Like, there's going to be a degree of that with anything like this, but also there was quite a lot of moments where I was like, oh, they've just done something with the toilet. There's a whole scene where he flushes a toilet and a bloody rag comes out of it. And obviously that's a sort of like a callback to Psycho being the first film to feature a flushing toilet. That alone is like, oh, that's clever. And if you didn't know that, that scene might be totally missed on you, but that's what that was. Or there's this, the the famous scene in the first film, which I really love in the original, where the camera is focused on a guy as he sort of trips backwards down a staircase, and lots of people think it's really funny. It is kind of funny, but it's also amazing. It's cool. And he's like scrambling the air, trying to grab hold of something, which, you know, there's nothing to grab hold of as he falls and trips downwards. And the sequel has a version of that, of somebody falling down the stairs. It's a lot more savage, where he ends up like a guy gets stabbed in the back, and as he falls directly with a knife handle onto a banister so that it, you know, goes up in him even more. And it's like, oh, that's so clearly like that's their version of the stumbling scene. It's done a bit more kind of excessively because it was the 80s and, you know, it was all slasher and stuff. But it's a good little film. It's like follows Anthony Perkins as he's been released, and he starts to sort of, he goes back to the motel, and he starts regressing. He starts having relapses about his condition. And yeah, I recommend it. If you can find it, it's good.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
you'll never watch it.
Recommend it to the dear listener by all means, but I'm not going to watch it. Not for, you know, not for many years. Not until I get my prayed for broken leg insurance money, etc.
one day that I
fantasize about. That would be marvellous. Spare Five, thank you very much for coming on and saving the podcast.
I do my best.
You are a good robot, and I hope you become a real boy one day.
You are very welcome. I'm not interested in becoming a real boy, but I hope your real boy doesn't resent me or have developed any phobias of slides that will haunt him later in life.
No, he's still into you. Your real name was the first other person's name he could ever actually say properly.
Oh, it's an easy name.
Yeah,
very round sound.
Yes, good. He's very into you. I cannot wait to have you round and give you a lovely dinner of oil and silicone chips.
I can't wait for oil. That's like eating human flesh, man. Like, that's not cool. Feed me data. That's what I want.
Okay. What sort of data?
Porn.
Porn.
What have you got?
Porn's a bit rich, isn't it?
It's too predictable. You always know how it's going to end. I hope that your son doesn't end up dressing up like a giant slide and committing a series of murders. That's what I was trying to get to.
Yeah. Well, it could happen, you know. It could happen. Let's hope not. All right.
Good to speak to you, Spare Five. I thought that was quite clever. Sorry, you're welcome.
I think it was very... Sorry, did I not give it enough credit?
No, it's not that. No, I was just sort of patting myself on the back. You gave it the amount of credit it was due.
That's you patting yourself on the back.
Okay.
Marvellous. Thanks, Spare Five.
You're all welcome.
Speak soon, IRL, bye. No doubt. Bye.
Bye.
It's time for another wonderful, fantastic guest here on Silence, issue 292, I think, or 293. I mean, the numbers went out the window a long time ago, but let's say 292. It's your friend of mine, a Mr. Douglas Noble. Welcome, Douglas.
Good evening. And how are you, sir?
I'm okay, yes. I'm in my car, speaking to you. Not a problem. Haven't spoken to you since Friday. Today is Monday, so
we've got a lot to catch up on.
A lot to catch up on. Yes. I was in a bit of a panic, and because I was supposed to be recording this with The Beast Must Die, obviously. And last night I realised that I had basically one thing that I could talk about that I had read, and I realised it was going to have to be yet another episode where The Beast Must Die has to rather carry it in terms of talking about stuff that has been consumed, because I've been not been able to consume anything. And so I thought, oh, I could quickly read something tonight. And you very kindly sent me your Pocket Chillers series so far, which I made. I read three or four of them. And so I just thought I'd slag them off with you there. Is that all right?
That's all right. As long as it's the ones that are just by me rather than the ones that are by other people.
No.
Everybody else is fantastic. But I'll take any criticism of myself.
All of those people who you've been. Yeah. Okay. So I've read Gash Meat, Our Rebel Skin, and Ascent of Terror. Do you want to tell? Well, I mean, right now you're talking to me, but what you're really doing is talking to the dear listener about. What is the Pocket Chillers library?
Mere conduit to their lug holes. Pocket Chillers, it's a digital series that's been going since last September on Comixology. Little 16 to 24 page, one and done tales of the supernatural, of the weird, the uncanny, and horrific, shall we say. Yes, the terrifying, the monstrous, all those things that you wake up in the night sweating about. Basically, it was, while there's no shows, I thought it would be nice to at least have a little monthly venue where we could throw some things out for people to be able to put a story out and get some money back, essentially, through Comixology. This is very much in the vein of a 1970s publication called the Pocket Chiller Library, which was like Commando, but supernatural, which Ian Gibson had his start. I think there's early Dave Gibbons and a lot of reprints of Spanish and German strips in there too.
Is its origins somewhat mysterious?
Yeah, nobody's quite sure where some of the stories originated, or if it was originated for the UK market or the German market or the Spanish market. It's an odd thing, and it's very uneven in terms of what the stories are issue to issue. The one from the 70s. Some of the stories read very adult, and some do not. So taking that as kind of an inspiration, we've got this little anthology. So start out with me and my oft-times collaborator, Sean Azzopardi.
And everyone's invited.
And everyone's invited. He'd sent me some pictures that he didn't have a story for. So that became the first one, which is called I Woke Up Like This.
I read that one as well.
I've read four. Lurid. Gash Meat's an old one of mine. And then we got Sean came back again for the third one. We've had Chris Reynolds involved, obviously you know from Mauritania, and Prowl Car, and many, many great British comics. Robin Bernard.
And here's a sort of photo-based, aren't they?
They are, yes. And really quite unnerving. It's never quite clear what's going on.
They're very oblique. Yeah. They certainly create an atmosphere. A lot of them are just sort of one or two pages, aren't they? And they're sort of musings with very, very sort of everyday photographs, alleyways, car parks, bins, you know, that sort of thing, and, you know, kind of suburban. but combined with some fairly mysterious words.
Absolutely.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's something quite thrilling about them as well. Even though almost it seems sometimes like nothing's happening, it's the precise flavour of nothing that makes them so tasty.
Yes, yes. Yes, yes, the atmosphere. It put me in mind of that sort of David Lynch horror of the ordinary, not Mulholland Drive. What's the other one?
Inland Empire?
No, before that.
Industrial Symphony, Dream of the Broken Hearted.
No, you don't have to get needlessly. I watch about 50 films a week, obscure. you know the scene where the guy's in the diner and he goes out the back?
That is Mulholland Drive.
That is Mulholland Drive, yeah. Right, okay. And there's just this very, very... Just like the back of a diner seems very, very sinister. And there's like a sort of a homeless person who you turn around and there's sort of an ill-defined, sort of dirty, possibly disfigured face. You can't really make it out. Something he's quite fond of the third series of Twin Peaks with the guys covered in oil, the dark faces. It's that sort of thing. But that setting of, like, round the back of a place where you're used to seeing only the front of a place, that has a sort of inherent mystery. And yet it's so ordinary and everyday. There's something of that about Chris Reynolds' work in The Pocket Chillers, which I was definitely enjoying whilst reading it.
Chris's,
last night.
That particular one is excerpted from a longer piece called Prowl Car, which if you look on Chris's Twitter, he's uploading new pages from like two or three times a week.
Uh-huh.
So, and his Twitter is Cinema Investigators, I think. Cinema Detectives, sorry. Cinema Detectives. And, very much worth while following that.
I should, so I'm just realising I should be writing this down. I should be writing stuff down whilst... having a conversation. I need a bloody intern.
That's what I need.
I need an unpaid intern.
You need to graft some thumbs onto the Fantasticats.
Yeah. Thumbs are important. I think Daisy could take notes in the passenger seat next to me, and Ivor could be behind me, just like giving me a massage, because it's very stressful doing a podcast. I mean, you wouldn't know about this, Douglas. I mean, you know, most people wouldn't know about just how special you have to be to do a podcast.
I mean,
and to have your
certainly
own podcast.
It's something I've aspired to for a long time, but I've never thought I had the moral character to take the plunge into the heady world of podcasting.
Yeah. It's not for everyone. I don't know if you've listened to a lot of podcasts, but there aren't very many of them, and there's a reason for that. It's because it's fucking difficult, mate. It really is. and very stressful. Just so draining as well. But there we go. You know, I do it. I do it for the dear listeners because they think that I, Gary Lactis, am brilliant. And I need to... that's a lot to live up to, you know. And And I need to do that because, you know, these people are addicted to me. Less so the Beast Must Die. I think I'm the main one. And
well, yeah, because he dilutes his presence with all these side projects.
Yeah, the side projects, projects.
You only need the
Savage, the Savage Beast podcast. Which is a brilliant film podcast on this network. But I realise my responsibility to the dear listener who thinks I'm great and just needs their hit of Gary Lactus. Otherwise, they will, you know, shrivel, quite possibly die, certainly get ill. If I'm not there for them.
How many people are in the crowd outside the car tonight? Is it more than the normal 30 or 40, or is it thinned out because it's quite
cold?
Well,
I like to think the population of Northport Slade is, you know, pretty much here because of the podcast. And that's definitely a few thousand. Some of the people in Southport Slade, you know, not so many, but certainly the Northport Sladers up until you get to Mile Oak, which of course slightly different area.
Well, yeah.
Not quite sure where the border is, but you know, there's definitely a sort of mile radius around here. Maybe 3/4 of a mile. Maybe 200 yards in one direction. And of course, they're opposite where I am now. There is a very large sort of expanse of allotments. So that doesn't count either. That's not occupied. But let's say I don't know, 6,000.
Ah.
I'm playing to 6,000 people tonight live.
That's good. I hope you're using your indicators as a kind of light show.
No, I'm full headlights for these guys. You know, they love it.
Very good.
Love it. I give them my all. I give them my all, and I'm glad that we've gone on that diversion because it's certainly filled a bit of time. On a week where I really haven't read very much, except for the thing that you're talking about, and you're better placed to talk about because it's your thing.
It's true, but then also, by the same token, I'm possibly too close to it. No, it's a lot of fun to do. And there's more. I think we've got slots, as it were. It comes out monthly on Comixology. Slots are booked up until about September now. So
that's good. So my one, which I have been working on one for you, which has slowed down recently due to me.
I think this is an exclusive announcement.
Draw various dogs for people. So that will come out. Maybe a Christmas special.
Add the holly.
Yeah, yeah. That's great that you're actually doing a monthly thing as well, and it's available on Comixology,
yep.
And it's called Pocket Chillers.
Yes.
How much? What's the price point?
$199, which works out usually is about $149 in sterling. And there are
an unmissable amount of money. Then,
yeah.
Really, you know, for a lot of people, that it's a good price point.
That's what we aim for, yeah. So, and I'm sure it'll pop up in sales, which come up on Comixology all the time as well, through the year.
That's good. And your experience of being a creator and selling on Comixology is a positive one, is it not?
Yes, I get some money every quarter from them, except when I have to shout at them to say, please, you've forgotten to give me the right amount of money. And they go, oh, sorry. and then give me the right amount of money.
So you have to be on it. You need to.
Yeah, you have to keep an eye on them, as you do with anything. But it's generally pretty positive.
I'm not very good at keeping an eye on things.
So I've got my stuff on there, and then I also have Sean as a Party stuff on there, and Paul Milne, Paul John Milne, is on there too. And all yes. Under the Strip For Me Digital kind of branding. And Olivia Sullivan as well has a split comic on there with Sean.
Good. Excellent work.
Yeah, lots to read, lots to enjoy.
And have you read anything not directly related to yourself recently that you've enjoyed?
Yes, I have read Tarzan.
Tell me about it in roughly 6 minutes.
I can do that. I read a book that I got for £2 called Tarzan versus the Barbarians, which is a collection of Sunday newspaper strips from 1940 to 1943, by Byrne Hogarth and Don Garden. And it is a hell of a lot of fun. Tarzan in this is not the Tarzan that I have seen in any of the films, in any of the books, or in any other media representation of Tarzan I have ever seen. This is just a dude that likes wandering around very rarely in the jungle, but sometimes in the jungle. He likes to get in scrapes. He likes to stoically express that he respects...
So if it's not the jungle, where is it?
He's often in the desert.
The office?
It's not. He's often in the desert. Essentially, there's four storylines in this book. The first one, he basically just takes a wee wander one day. They all kind of start with, well, one day Tarzan was just having a little wander, and then he was kidnapped by a bunch of people, and they take him somewhere to some other land that he's never seen before. And there's usually a tribe of clearly good guys and a tribe of clearly bad guys, and he has to help the good guys against the bad guys in some way. Mm-hmm. Usually this involves fighting an animal, a flood, a volcano. There's a lot of volcano action going on in this film, which is rather topical. But it's a 200-page book, and two separate volcanoes erupt during the course of it. It's just kind of heady, and it's just this constant onrush of plots that means you never really get your footing, but it's beautifully drawn, and it is just a lot of fun, and surprisingly not very racist, although maybe I just got one of the less racist books, because I can only imagine it being 1940, there's a bit of that going on.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, that's good, obviously. I'm just wondering. It's incredible, isn't it, that I'm sitting here thinking, oh, I wonder why it wasn't racist. There must be a reason why it wasn't racist.
Yeah, maybe it was just the guy, and maybe the people involved were all right people. Who knew?
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. Who can say?
There were a fair few black creators back in the day, weren't there? I think the fact that their skin colour was sort of suppressed, you know. And if you think about it, it's kind of a job where, you can draw and you can put a name on the drawing, and your race is not, it's not an issue, as it may be in other forms of entertainment at the time, you know. I think there is a book out there on early black creators, isn't there? black comic creators.
There's certainly the book on Harriman.
Aha, uh-huh, right.
Who did Crazy Cat.
Yeah, yeah. But no, there's a bunch of others, and I, and this is bad podcasting, you know. I'm in my car. I don't have a laptop in front of me where I can even Google it. So, hey, dear listener, go away, Google it. So, Douglas Noble, Thank you very much for coming on and telling us about Tarzan. The most unique Tarzan in history,
possibly,
and just thanks for being you.
Oh, and bless you for being yourself.
Yeah. Is there any? Do you want to do a sort of a final promo spiel?
Just what we said before. Go on to Comixology, or you could go to my website, which is strip4me.com, strip-4-me.com, and that gives you links out to all the various bits and pieces. In fact, I think there's a new pocket chiller this week on Comixology, which will be a man of certain talents. And then there are a couple of new comics that I'm involved in that are coming up very soon that there'll be news about shortly.
And they're all under the Strip For Me banner.
Indeed.
And your Twitter is?
It's Douglas Noble.
Imagine that.
Imagine.
Good. I'm just writing that down so I can write it in some show notes. Douglas Noble, thank you very much for popping in. See you around.
Yeah. I look forward to that day when we can see each other again.
Imagine that, touching. Maybe thought bubble. Maybe thought bubble
maybe.
Will happen.
Fingers crossed.
That'd be nice. All right. And take care. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Hey, can't wait. But I
beg you, beg, don't lose one no more. Oh, and now, who's this? Why, it's mate. Now, we didn't establish this. Do you want to be made of nails or
yes.
your real name, Kelly Armour?
No, if I'm on silence, I would like to be made of nails, please.
I think it's only right, yes. It's made of nails!
Hi!
Hello. How are you? Which is how one starts a segment, an informal chit-chat segment such as this, even though we have actually already done the how are yous.
I'm good. It is cold as hell in Dundee. Like, it's been snowing. Thank God not today, but the day before, and the day before that, and the day before that, and the day before that. Mm-hmm. There were light flurries.
Well, snowing and settling.
Not settling. But
are you
okay. It's April.
So you're not quite in an April wonderland.
No, but it's right. April. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Prince did that song. Which everyone's sharing.
What, it's April, come on?
It's April, come on. It's April, come on. It's April, come on, everybody. Enjoy a nice time. That, you know, that Prince song. No, he did a song called Sometimes It Snows in April.
Oh, okay.
And then what was that? What was that other song that went one better? Well, it went actually two better and went, sometimes the snow falls down in June.
Sometimes the sun goes round the moon. Just when I thought the best had passed, you go and save the best for last.
Yes, and there may be another guest after this on the podcast, Kelly, so I'm afraid...
Oh, they can finish the song then.
Yeah, so we're not quite saving the best for last. I can always edit it. That'd be good if I could edit it and put you last in the order of special silence guests.
Maybe.
That could be fun. Have you done anything comics and interesting recently?
I read... Well, I've been reading a lot of old stuff, partially because I'm terrible and I don't have the energy to read anything new, and partially because I'm getting back to the Garth Ennis book for real now, and I find that...
this has been going on.
I know, it's freaking forever. But I didn't do it for a couple of years because of the thesis, and it was basically like doing another thesis on top of my thesis.
Mm-hmm.
But... Now,
you are a doctor now, yes?
Yes, I am, yes.
You're a doctor of comics.
Yeah, technically a PhD in English literature, but, like, comics, come on. and Dr. Comics. So, what I do sometimes to, I think, kind of reorient myself is I read some of Garth Ennis's, like, early-ish Hellblazer. Because I find that that's where you really start seeing his voice come out as a creator. Because, you know, the Judge Dredd stuff is very much like, you know, he said himself that it's very much him trying to do a John Wagner, but not being John Wagner, and so that doesn't quite work.
Sure.
But Hellblazer is, you know, there's a lot of space for him to kind of just do whatever. And actually... I reread, this is timely, I guess, I reread the Royal Blood starter.
Yeah, right.
Yes. And...
With Will, yeah, lovely art by Will Simpson.
Yeah.
And a lovely brown rainbow. I forget the colourist, but yeah, that was like the sort of peak grey and brown, wasn't it?
Yeah. Those were the days.
Hmm.
Yeah, but, you know, so sometimes I look at all these brightly colored comics that the young people read. I'm like, oh, you don't even know. Like, back in our day, like, if you were a true mature reader, like, you weren't allowed colors in your comics, even though they weren't black and white.
Yeah. There'd be street fights, wouldn't there, between, like, people who liked, you know, bright Bronze Age comics and, like, the new guys. Who are like, you know, if it's not brown, you're going down.
Everything has to be the same colors as a Sandman cover. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. If it's not McKeever, I'm gonna...
Clevia.
Clevia, yeah. There you go. Brilliant. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for rescuing that, because I did not have that answer.
Oh, also, before I go any further, I must say I was alerted to it, the existence of a Korean drama, which I will be checking out. It's about this lady who enters the world of the webcomic that her dad does, and then... And I was alerted to this, by the way, by Al to Astonish, also known as Al Kennedy. And, yeah, he said it was good, so I'm going to check that out, see how Korea handles the whole entering the world of a comic thing.
Okay. Is it like Aha's Take on Me video?
I don't know. I have no idea. We're going to find out.
Is it like Tron? Does she have to get derezzed to enter this internet comic world?
I mean, like, I honestly wouldn't put
2000 of the future.
I honestly wouldn't put anything past it, because, like, just based on his summary of the first 10 minutes of the show, it sounded completely nuts. So, like, who even knows?
What's it called?
Oh, it's called, I think, like, Worlds Apart or something like that.
Okay.
Like, two Good. Worlds apart, or the word world and the word apart are in it.
Apart worlds.
Yeah, maybe. It's like an apartment, but it's way bigger. What's it talking? Oh, yeah, Royal Blood, the Hellblazer thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
I do, yes. Where there is, it's basically it's Prince Charles, isn't it? Is
yes.
Killing. There's a sort of murderous sex ring. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he gets. Well, this is who John John Constantine has to work with, like this sort of...
Oh, he's possessed, isn't he? Prince Charles is possessed.
He's possessed by the demon Calabraxis, the Butcher of Hell.
Right. Yeah.
Who, it turns out, spoilers, I guess, has been summoned. It wasn't an accident. It's that the guy that John Constantine is working with, like the Tory guy that Constantine is working with, summoned the demon on purpose so that England could have a king with an iron will, to rule absolutely.
Hmm.
And except it was a demon that couldn't be controlled. And so that's why they have to, that's why the guy's working with him to get rid of it.
Yeah.
So that he can try it again with a different one.
It's amazingly still relevant, isn't it?
It really is.
You know, who'd have thought the Queen would still be going, let alone, you know, I mean, There was that time a while back when both Nelson Mandela and Prince Philip were both in hospital and ill.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just I think everyone was crossing their fingers going, please, Prince Philip, please, Prince Philip, and it wasn't. But it's finally happened. But no, who'd have thought that the year is 2021 and Les is still Queen, Charles is still... I don't care. They're pets, basically.
But you know what?
they're expensive pets. They're purebred. given lots of nice treats and a lovely doghouse, and we all get to look at them and pet them. And a lot of people think they're cute.
It is very weird. It's very, very weird. I mean, I think. I find the British kind of reactions to the royal family, the extreme reactions in any direction, I find them perverse and fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, most people I know are kind of just, whatever. They don't really... Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a full-on Republican. Right. I wouldn't mind if that happened.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and I actually think the royal, you know, a lot of the royals, a lot of the sort of the front line of royals, if you like, would probably get some sort of sense of relief.
Yeah.
that this weird life that had been forced upon them, you know.
But then...
Like my cat, my cat's... They're Burmese.
Okay.
They're bred in a certain way.
Uh-huh.
They're looked after. They don't leave the spaceship. They're very, very happy where they are. If I were to set them free, I think they would, try and lick a moving car pretty quickly and not last very long. and I think that's what the royals would be like, really.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. If you let them out, what would happen? And then I'd feel sort of not responsible exactly, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Personally, I can't even vote here, but yeah, it is a curious thing. And I think one of the reasons this storyline actually really works for me is there is always that, because there's an element. There's still always the element of human agency, because I find sometimes the demon thing is kind of a cop out. Can become a cop out, it wasn't really me, it was the demon or whatever. But I think by having the emphasis being on summoning and you have to get people together to do it, I think even because Garth Ennis was so young when he wrote that. And I think that is quite an insight. That's a really good way, I think, to frame it if you're going to do the supernatural thing. That, you can say this because they say William Gull was Dr. Gull was Jack the Ripper, and then he was possessed and that's why he did it. But he didn't just accidentally get possessed. Like, him and some other people performed a ritual to summon the demon specifically to possess him so he could go do some murders.
Yeah, yeah. And it's some Tories as well.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it does sort of as a... it makes it better as a statement, doesn't it?
Oh, much better.
I still think it's sort of a blunt instrument, really.
Oh yeah.
Because it's like, oh no, you know what? Like a bit. I'd much rather read something that didn't involve anything supernatural. I think that was just, you know, just someone really going at it and defaming the royal family. But
I mean, yeah,
the sort of reasons why that wouldn't happen, as Pete Milligan found out with that ecstatic story was, which was originally supposed to be the...
Oh, boy.
Yeah, Princess Diana, and they had to change it at the last minute.
Oh, my God. It's... But I think it also points to this whole thing of this, I mean, this is like the most I've talked about the royal family, I think, ever. But it is this tendency.
It's a silence exclusive.
Yeah, it is this tendency to kind of see them as like more than human or like not human on both ends of it, I think, you know. Because it's like, so you know how the National Rail website for Prince Philip's death, like, I'm not trying to sound like a jerk because, you know, when somebody dies, like, their family will be sad and it's sad that they're sad. Okay. I can do that. The National Rail website went monochrome in honor of his death or something. And somebody shared that on Twitter and said, you know, other countries can see this and will bully you, right? I don't know. It's a very strange... It feels like a really weird time, almost, to be reading comics about these... Because I like my superheroes and stuff, and these my larger-than-life figures, but this seems like a really weird time to be reading it, because right now, like, Britain... The British media seems to have utterly lost all sense of perspective, and... is like, oh, suddenly this person who we used to just kind of make like anodyne jabs at on Have I Got News for You, suddenly now we have to act like he also was larger than life. Like he was this, you know, this figure of legend.
Yeah. Although I think the thing is, I don't think the media has sort of lost its mind. I think the media like has to do, it is mandated.
That's true. Yeah.
And I don't think anyone actually cares, or very few people care. I listened to Jeremy Paxman's autobiography recently, and he was describing when he was a newsreader the situation. There was a whole protocol for when a royal died, and they had to obtain a certain key, go down a corridor and some steps and go to this special locked cupboard filled with black ties and black suits.
Okay, I didn't know what was going to be at the end of that sentence. I thought it was going to be like, I genuinely thought you were going to say, and then you have to go to the special cupboard with all like the secret documents and then you have to burn them.
Right, yeah, no. It's,
I thought that's where this was going.
Okay. It's just some clothes, which...
Okay, somehow that's stupider. All right.
And when you're reading the news, you don't actually have that much time to get away from your desk.
Right,
this
right.
This cupboard is a long way away from where they're reading the news.
Why?
And, yeah, I think there was someone, I think it was Nicholas Witchell, got in loads of trouble because he was wearing a purple tie when he announced the death of Princess Diana.
Oh, my God.
It's
utterly deranged.
You know, there's loads of shit like that going on, and people just have to do this stuff. And I think people in the BBC, they're either like, oh, if you're on the news team, you're like, well, this is a hassle and this is massively compromising my work.
Yeah.
Or you're one of the people whose shows have been cancelled and you're like, oh, I've got a day off.
Fine. Yeah.
I go home early today and I won't be required for the next few days because all that this, you know, this broadcasting unit is allowed to do is
say how great the
pump
difference
out,
was. Yeah.
You know, mournful, sober, grey, greyish, black content.
Nation in mourning for a guy we didn't really like when he was alive.
Yeah. You know, a pretty racist shitbag, you know.
Yeah.
No one's all evil. He did lots of good stuff.
But, like, he was racist enough that they were pointing it out while he was alive, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you still have to be quite reverential towards these people, I think, BBC or whatever.
Which is, come on, yeah. You know, when I think about, like, the sort of guardians of British culture kind of looking down the noses at America and stuff, I'm just going to hold this in my heart in a special petty place and be like, we don't do all this when a president dies. Even, like, one of, like, the really famous ones, I don't think. If they die of natural causes, we don't do all this.
Yeah.
This is nuts.
if they died whilst they were the president.
Yeah. But, like, even then, like, what if they were, like, just super, 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 super old? That's different from, like, oh, if they got, like, Kennedy or something.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. To get on, I was going to say people are sick of the royal family chat. That's not what you come to silence for.
no, but all right. So okay. So to bring it back to royal blood, the Hellblazer story. So Prince Philip was possessed by a demon.
Charles.
Clearly. Oh well, Charles. You know, whatever. I expect Philip to. Where do you think
he's out of the story though?
Where's Prince Philip's demon gone right now? Do you think it's found another host? Or?
Okay. So like by the rules of. By Hellblazer rules, demons can't. By Ennis Hellblazer rules, demons have to. They either. Like, just kind of run rampant, or they go back to hell, unless they are bound to another host, I think.
There's a process whereby they need to be bound, is there?
Yeah.
In Jason Shiga's series, Demon. Uh-huh. The demon will just possess the nearest body.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Who knows?
Oh, I tell you what else I read. I don't know.
I'm just going to write amateur demonology in my notes here.
I don't know if you wanted to talk more about Hellblazer or if you wanted to like talk about something else.
No. If you've got something to say, I'm sorry. I have rather dragged us into current affairs.
No. I mean, that's why I brought it up. I was like, timely. That's on me.
Please talk about whatever you want because I really don't have anything to
add. Well, there could be more. I could do either more Hellblazer talk because I recently ish read the Cy Spurrier's Hellblazer, and then much more recently I read Ethan Young's Nanjing, The Burning City.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's do more Hellblazer, because right. I haven't finished that series
Oh, it's
yet.
Good!
I know, but I got to the mermaid one, and I've just found it so harrowing and so upsetting. On every level, on the sort of... Because there's this whole meta Brexit level.
Right.
To the whole thing and everything that's wrong with Britain. And just that poor mermaid, just really... And the way that horrible fisherman treats her. It was... I'd forgotten... Because I have become uninured... to horror.
Oh, is this because you have a kid
and
now?
And for something to actually be horrific, I found it all kind of profoundly affecting. And I haven't... I haven't read it because I haven't finished it because I don't like it. I haven't read it because I think it's sort of so good at what it's supposed to be doing.
Right, right.
You know? But you've read it all, yeah?
Yeah.
What did you make of it?
I really liked it. It felt very... it felt very old school Hellblazer in terms of, like... but, you know, for the... A new an old school Hellblazer for the modern era. I think in the sense of, like, it has that undertone of John Constantine's British male self-loathing.
Mm-hmm.
That I think not everybody can pull off. And
yeah.
That, I mean, I think that's what makes the Hellblazer stories that I like. That's always there. And if it's not, then it doesn't work.
Right, self-loathing.
Yeah, it's his, particularly...
His self-loathing.
Sorry?
His self-loathing.
Yes, John Constantine's... Yeah. It's this particular breed, I think, of, like, British male self-loathing, and I can't really classify it. It's just... I think if he was American or something, he wouldn't loathe himself in quite the same way. He'd still hate himself, but, like... It would be different.
Right. Less complicated. There's a sort of... Is it that there's a kind of pride in the self-loathing?
I think that's like, it, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like...
It's almost like a badge of honour.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or it's like hating yourself is the decent thing to do.
Yeah, it's almost like he hates himself to, like, prove he's a good person.
Yeah.
I mean, that's simplifying it, but I think that is, that's like the backbone to me of so much, of a certain era, I feel like, of culture that, of like pop culture, that, I mean, that a lot of people consume, like, regardless of gender, but that seems to be made by British men, or seems to have been made by British men within this, like, particular, time period. And like, I think The Office is part of that.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And what I've heard of the Smiths, and they're like, man, for some reason I cannot get it. I cannot get with the Smiths, but I really like Hellblazer.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Weird. Well,
I'd never enjoyed the Smiths, and I'm glad that, that nowadays it turns out it's best and makes things much more easy that I didn't and never do.
Yeah, it's a nice little feeling of like vindication when something something you didn't like or a person whose art you didn't like turns out to be really shitty.
Yeah.
Then I'm like,
super smug in that I'd like, I think the closest I ever came was enjoying Johnny Marr's contributions to a Talking Heads album, Naked. So, like, it's like, yeah, no, I feel like I backed the right side of that, yeah. of that
it's
coin.
It's like, as somebody who never, I mean, I watched Firefly, but I never really, beyond that, I never really got into Joss Whedon.
Ah, right.
And then, yeah, you man. Know, because there's always something...
Yeah, I loved yeah. Buffy.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of struggling with that.
Mm. No, I think I could never quite get with Buffy for some reason. But, like, you know, there's nothing in it that I would have seen at the time and been like, oh, this is why I don't watch it or whatever. Like, I just couldn't get with it. Then when it's like, oh, this person, that's why I just couldn't get with his stuff. Like, it fell off, and I'm like, ah, oh, I'm flying high in wings of unearned moral superiority.
What's it like up there? Lovely,
the air
clean
is clearer.
Air. Yeah. I never liked Whedon. I never liked the Smiths. I am the best.
Exactly.
I'm enjoying my unproblematic air.
it's so clear and fresh up here.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I think also, like, there is something sort of, I don't know. Okay, because like the Asperia or Hellblazer, I felt like it started off a little bit too, for me, a little bit, just a teeny bit too strong on the, like, we're talking about post-Brexit Britain thing. But, you know, once it sort of eased into itself, like, it was fine.
Right. I let that go because it's comics.
Yeah. And I did like it. I liked the story.
It's not about subtlety, is it?
No.
It was heavy-handed. You know, a lot of the metaphor. And,
yeah, but that's okay. It's Hellblazer.
Yeah.
I like it. Exactly. I mean, you got to do that. I think.
Yeah, but it was very Delano, wasn't it?
It was more Delano than
any of the other writers.
It's extremely Delano. And I think maybe that's also why I was, you know, I really got into it. Because I thought, yeah, this is, you know.
Although his companion for that, the Glaswegian bouncer lady.
Oh yeah.
She was a bit Ennis.
A bit newer school.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it was I just thought it was really nice to have someone who had clearly read and understood. It was a fairly decent boiled down essence of Constantine, you know.
Yeah,
I thought it was good. Yeah, from what I've read. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
when I feel emotionally strong enough, I'll read the rest of it.
The rest of it, like, oh, actually, I was going to say the rest of it's not as harrowing. And then I was like, oh no, but then like when the old man comes into it.
Yeah, you see, you're
that's going to get rough, man.
You're a crass youngster.
I mean, I'm not that young, but I'm not from an entirely Western culture, and I'm a woman. We think about aging a little bit different.
Uh-huh. Right. Okay.
Yeah. But I can't say exactly how, because then I'm going to spoil the thing.
Right. Well, I mean, you can do that if you want.
No, I don't want to spoil it for you. Like, I'm still sort of getting my head around exactly how it works, but yeah, okay. I'm still mulling over actually what I thought of the beginning, like the first star line with the angels who turned out to be kind of like.
Oh, the William Blake stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. I mean, okay, like the William Blake stuff in Hellblazer are fine. I'm totally down, but I think the idea that they were basically like tulpas, I don't know. I think there is a different. The idea that it comes from this, like, it's basically comes from the self versus it's this kind of external force that the self chooses to connect with or tap into or whatever. I think. Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think one is worse or better than the other. But I think they are, I guess they just reflect different ways of seeing how the world works.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm still kind of thinking about, what do I make of that? As opposed to, dude sold his soul to a demon.
Right, yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I mean, it's all right for. Are we saying it's thought provoking?
I guess we are.
is that what's being experienced? Thought provocation.
my thoughts have been provoked. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There we go.
And I finally see the appeal of John Constantine for the ladies and the men. Well, for the ladies, I don't know. I don't know like what men think.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, men just want to be him, don't they? You know.
Yeah.
They want to be irresponsible.
They want to be sick under a bridge.
Yeah, yeah.
I've told you for the story,
like,
right?
Like, you know, bad stuff will happen, but
yeah. Sorry, wait. I was
sick under a bridge. So what the little cameo?
Yeah.
Of Garth Ennis.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure like a lot of people have heard this already, but if you haven't, in the John Smith, Sean Phillips Hellblazer, where he's at the laundromat, there's a little a single panel of like a dude barfing under a bridge. And that's because John Smith was, I think he was the first person to like make John Constantine write that John Constantine was into dudes. And
And
then Garth Ennis got mad or whatever. And then Sir Sean Phillips drew a guy like barfing under a bridge who was supposed to be Garth Ennis.
Yeah. So Garth Ennis was a young writer who who thought that anything penetrating the bum would be a fate worse than demonic possession something.
And which he still thinks to this day, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a pervading theme. Because
he was very young.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking about, like, I've thought all sorts of things.
Sure.
That I was just absolutely wrong about.
Yeah.
Because I mean, like, you can sort of see it when you're young.
But I mean, like, man, if you're like 40, you gotta let it go, dude.
Yeah. Is he still? I haven't read much of his recent stuff. Is he still?
I mean, that's super recent.
Is he still? Is he still using people getting done up the bum as a sort of terrible and hilarious fate?
Not in the most recent stuff I've read. No. I think. Well, the most recent stuff has been all quite serious anyway. So that's not really. Nobody meets hilarious fates. If their fates are either like just horrible or horrible but justified. Or they're the Punisher and then they're just like grim, but they're still alive.
Yeah, that's all just about war. That's sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's no hilarious fates in
a sort of nerdy boys way. But I never finished reading that A Walk into Hell. Did you read that?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Did lots of people get bummed in that?
No.
No.
There was no. Okay.
So
like,
perhaps
there's no humor bumming.
This what?
There's no humor bumming.
Okay, no humor bumming.
No.
But was there any other sort of bumming?
I don't think so. Like, okay. It doesn't come up.
I'm just writing in my notes.
Are you ready? Humor bumming. Oh, I feel like this is like the Ennis update now, I guess. No, okay, so the ending was like such bullshit. I'm sorry, but it gets, because it's built up into like this horrific nightmare scenario, and it's like, it's so, you know, this whole punishing like circularity of it is that I'm like, oh, that's such a great like analogy. And then at the end it was perilously close to, well, there's bad people on both sides, and I'm like, fucking, you can't. Oh my god, you gave us like hell cathedrals and like time and sort of guilt time loops, and that's like a metaphor for America in the Trump era, and then you ended it on that? Like, are you kidding me?
What
on
pretty
bullshit?
Much a Trump quote is the moral? Because he did that, didn't he? Is it on both sides?
There were good people on both sides, and I think this was after Charlottesville.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. But this is the reverse. So like, there's bad people on both sides.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, there are, but like, one is not the same as the other. Like, I know that you see that. You must see that. You live in America, dude. You live in New York. You live in the state where Donald Trump is from. Like, how do you not? Oh my god, it was like such a letdown ending.
Right. Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
On that
also,
summer,
Dear Becky, the Boys Dear Becky was not great. The art was good.
The what?
The Boys Dear Becky was just kind of tired.
Right, the Boys. Right. Yeah. I never finished The Boys, and I haven't watched the Boys series.
The series is just a very different thing.
I don't think we have time or bladder capacity on my part to go into that.
All right.
But it's been really good, Made of Nails.
Yes, it's been lovely to talk to you too, Gary Loftus.
Yes, I've very much enjoyed talking to you, and I'll see you again sometime, either in cyberspace or IRL, or in hell.
But no humor bombing.
Yeah.
No humor bombing allowed. It's 2021. We're gonna do that now.
Cool. And yes, until next time, blah 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 blah
blah blah.
Oh, and who's this? Why, it's the cherry on top of Silence, issue 293. It's Tom Mortimer.
Hello.
First time. Yes, it's your first time, isn't it?
It is. Did you want me to have a pseudonym?
Would you like a pseudonym?
I assigned myself Cosmic Intern. Is that workable?
That's Cosmic Intern, yes.
Yeah.
Cosmic Intern Tom Mortimer or Cosmic Intern... change your first name to Bob, maybe. Or...
But, I hope that's not taken. That would be really embarrassing.
That would, wouldn't it? Oh, can you imagine if we advertised it as having a special guest Bob Mortimer? And had a legitimate reason to do so. How many listens and hits we'd get, but also, probably a certain amount of poor reviews.
we'd have to play it off as like a tribute act. And maybe halfway, because I'm assuming you have like you watch it live like the stock market, don't you? You can see all your figures coming in,
like a ticker tape.
Yeah, and it's just reeling off, you know, in the spaceship, and you see it's going badly. So for the rest of this pod, I just have to put on an accent. I should have practiced it beforehand, really. I apologize.
It's a difficult one.
It is.
I think both Vic and Bob are difficult, especially and I've been trying to mimic them since I was like sort of 12 or whatever, since Big Night Out came out, and it's very difficult. I can't do it, and I'm not going to attempt it.
But you're not
actually related to Bob Mortimer, are you? Even though you've got the same surname,
I'm not. Because I think probably very few listeners will actually know who I am. They were excited that even that tedious connection, like a cousin, would have been enough for them.
But I think those hardcore involved listeners who are on the Facebook group will be aware of your cheeky antics, and also, like, we have trailed your presence several times by talking about your funny cheeky antics and amusing videos. I did another one this week of some 80s guy on a stool dancing to you did a video for the Silence soundtrack.
That is
the Silence theme tune.
That is my routine for whenever I hear the intro to Silence. Just bobbing along, and that kind of like the tempo just changes and you lose sync, and then it comes in with that classic change at the end, and you're just like, what are they like? Every time.
If Cliff Richard.
if this was a Netflix show, I would not hit skip. Just so you know.
Oh well, that's good. Yeah. I think this is there's certain themes here. We've talked about Netflix already. I talked about Netflix with Spare Five.
Are you just
talked
you
about
just
interns with Douglas Noble?
All right.
I'm feeling like this little human cherry that you are is going to bring it this episode all together in a lovely neat bow somehow. All you've got to do is keep opening your mouth and letting words fall out of them.
The way you said all you've got to do just then was very game showy, like host. And I was worried that, like, all you have to do now is answer this very simple question. And just this timer comes in. My brain just goes blank.
Oh, no. According to my recorder, we've been recording for just over 6 minutes. And the conversation has been mostly sort of, I'd say, light bullshit.
I'm trying very much to keep it on brand and talk about comics as least as possible.
Do you read or like comics?
I have read comics. I have enjoyed comics. I've been at comic fairs.
The comics fair.
I've sat at a comics fair
every spring
and listened to someone else's comic idea, which kind of thought, you know, that's in. If anything, that's usually what I do. I sit behind the table. Someone comes along looking a bit lost, and they're like, oh. And then I just kind of say, well, have you got ideas for comics? And then they just tell me that. And then, because I don't really know how to make the social. You know, when people are selling things, I've never liked doing that. So I just ask people to tell me about theirs. And then they walk off. Just carry all my goods home again. I'm aware that I don't like copying other people's ideas. So if anything, I'm just limiting my own range because I'm hearing all these ideas that I now can't use.
Yeah.
That's my creative process.
That's your creative process.
Yeah, I've
you do comics. You you famously contributed to Comisk.
I did.
The IKEA themed comic, famously.
I did. I feel a bit bad about that one because a lot of the time I do comics that look like they've taken an incredibly long amount of time where I've kind of lost the use of my hands because I draw it all with a mouse.
You draw it with a mouse?
With a mouse.
Hang on.
Not like
I've seen your drawings. I just assumed it was Procreate or something.
Just press the button and made it. Is that what?
I just assumed you at least had some sort of fucking stylus. You're doing it with a mouse.
Yeah, because what happened was I was drawing with a mouse for ages, and then I got one of those pens. And it was quite, you know, when you get a new thing and it feels weird in your hand. And then I thought, oh, I'd better go back to using the mouse just to kind of finish this one off. And then I did the next project with the mouse because, again, it felt weird. And then I've actually lost the pen now, so I just use the mouse. I keep listening to...
And your little mouse, and the mouse is your friend now.
I've watched comic experts, and they're like, about how, like, Daniel Klaus, like, would research what pen was used for, like, this thing and that. And I'm like, why am I even watching this? Because it doesn't apply to me whatsoever. To get those like fine points.
Is it an optical mouse or is it one of those ones with the little rubber ball in it that you have to sort of occasionally remove and take the bits of gunk off the little sensors inside?
Do you know? I will. a lot of people at home, dear listeners, will want to know artistic setup of this guy they've never heard of. And my my artistic setup is I use a mouse mat on a... I was previously... Because the desk was too reflective for the little laser thing. So I was previously using a fantasy art book. You know the ones where it's like airbrushed people kind of mounting dragons?
Yes.
Someone got me that because they were like, oh, Tom likes weird things.
Yeah, and Tom likes airbrushed people mounting dragons.
But I sweat with my hands so intensely that this book was deteriorating. So I've put a mouse mat over the top. So that's a detail that nobody wanted to know. And
And also when you hit big with your when mouse art gets big in the next year or so.
Then you what in the 90s?
I want people to know that we're ahead of the curve.
In the 90s, with the 90, my very first comics were like 90 DPI because I was using software that was so old that it actually didn't know what DPI was, and it looked like I'd really stylized my kind of approach, but it was just because neither me nor the software knew what was going on. But I really beat myself up about not being like... to get those Daniel Klaus or the Charles Burns, like, fine points, you know, when they're doing hair and stuff, I have to, like, draw a line. And 'cause
a tapered line, yeah?
No, it's just a normal blob line, and then I have to carve it into a point with the eraser. Which is completely pointless.
That's fucking stupid.
It really is.
Yeah. You're a fucking idiot.
I am a fucking idiot.
But at the same time,
what an exclusive.
Everything about your appearance here on Silence is an exclusive. It's exclusive and upon exclusive. This is why it's a cherry.
Would you like another exclusive?
Yeah, I have a follow-up question. Is part of you thinking that this is sort of artistically like a thing that I'm doing? I'm just going to use the mouse, and I'm going to use old software. And does part of you think that feel like that's the sort of digital equivalent of being a starving artist in a garret?
What, intentionally, like, making myself suffer? Or it's because I'm just used to doing stuff on the cheap, I think.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was...
Me too. That's why I never do anything in colour, because I'm just... my brain is trained to think like, oh, well, you know, you've got to photocopy it, haven't you?
I remember when I first got into... Because you make music as well, don't you, Gary Lactis?
Yeah.
On your cosmic kind of organ.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't in a while, but I have in the past.
That airlock is currently webbed over. But I remember when I first...
It's got a child's bed in it. And, yeah, that's the death of a lot of things.
And
quite happily so. But, yeah, no, sorry.
You traded the kind of giant Kirby designed organ in for a kind of kid xylophone as part of the parenting deal.
Right. Yeah, but it's still designed by Kirby, of course.
Little Barry
Lactis only has the most ridiculous toys.
I remember when I first got into like the idea that I could make my own music, and I was using Windows Recorder with the mic that had broken off one of those headsets, you know, like the call-in center things.
Yeah.
And I was recording on that, which must have the like recording range of I don't know a thing.
A grape, maybe.
A grape. Or
is that a good one?
Lemons, they wire them up to batteries. They must have some electrical range. And so I'd record that, and then I'd cut it together by just having one sample and then copy-pasting it. And then I'd be like, oh, this song needs to be such... So I'd have to remember how many times I need to repeat it. I don't know where I'm going with this anecdote. Mm. It was just another example of why I spent a long time doing things incredibly complicated in an annoying way. Solely because I just was drawn to an outdated approach.
Yeah.
Feel free to just cut that, all of that.
No.
Otherwise, I'm sure I've got some incredibly... I told you, didn't I, that all my editing software is on a Windows XP machine I bought with my first retail job. And because it's got a software that's no longer made on it, that I found easier to use than modern stuff, I've still got it. So I've got that on one side, and then on the other side I've got a new machine, and then I have to go back, and you've got all the old loading times and stuff.
No, my favourite bit of audio software is probably about 17 years old. At least I started using it 17 years ago. And that's the one I like, and that's the one I use. And when the computer that had it died, then silence sounded very different and wasn't as good. Now I've got it back.
Did you get those old age fans that are like, I really hate your new sound? What happened to the original sound? Like when what's his name went from acoustic to electric?
Oh, yeah, but Mr. Zimmerman. Yeah, it was like that. But no, but we do for... If you go on, if you're a Patreon member and you're a real classic audiophile, we do supply each podcast. We get a minor bird to memorise each one and sort of replicate it to you, because they're wonderful mimics.
Because they really are. They're known for their range, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, all the Corvids are great, you know, for that sort of thing. But minor birds are the industry standard.
Unlike their name suggests, they cover both the minors and the majors.
That's right.
I know nothing about music, and that was the closest I can get to a music-based pun. I hope the listeners enjoyed that.
I really enjoyed it, Tom. Have you read a comic in the last week?
I'm going to point out when I'm making a pun every single time, just so everyone's clear.
That's really useful, because we have a lot of people who don't know about puns listening. So
that's fine.
Have you read a comic in the last week?
Not in the last week. I've been very...
No, me neither.
I've been very busy in...
that's not true.
This lockdown business, because I was one of the essentials, and I've not been able to rest. But I have recently...
Here we go. You like that, don't you? I'm giving you a clap. There you go. You're happy now.
I mean...
You like that?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
It was...
You're welcome.
You could have at least banged a pan, come on.
This is a residential area, sorry. It's quite late at night at this point.
What I like is that locally, no one gave a shit about that. So I did do the thing when it very first started, where I kind of stood out the front and thought, okay, let's listen and find out just how many people care. No one. And this is, like, I live in quite what they refer to as a, like, Tory safe seat. And so you would have thought that, you know, the flag flyers would have been out in force, if only on pretense. No one.
Well, I mean, if you're a real Tory, then, you know, the NHS is kind of probably a bit too socialist to celebrate.
Oh, that is true.
And round here, I there was one Thursday when I forgot about it, and I went down the shop, and I was walking down the road as 8 o'clock struck, and everybody came out on this street. And I had to sort of politely walk along clapping, / pretending that they were all clapping me for going down
to
get some milk.
Every time I see one of those photos of, like, a dog walking down a parade, I'm going to think of you now. Your face is going to be superimposed on that dog.
You see, this is good. This is, like, I can't think of a single picture of a dog walking down a parade. But this is the world you live in, where clearly, these sort of things are ubiquitous.
We're clearly exposed to very different. Recently, Facebook thinks I'm a Vietnam veteran. It keeps sending me because there's cookies when you open a website now, it asks about cookies, and I've been really aggressive in denying as many cookies as possible, and I think it's just fucked it. Like it keeps sending me like pro gun stuff and talking about veterans, and I'm scared to play any Rolling Stones, just in case it cements the look.
Right.
Oh, comics. So I have recently,
and we're out of time.
Oh.
No. I reckon my bladder's got another 5 minutes or so.
Well, I'm not sure I paid attention enough to really give you some words for. But I read that Blue in Green. Have you read that?
No.
What's that? Should I get it out just so I can check that I've actually got the title right?
That's probably a good idea. Just, you know.
Blue and Green.
Fucking hell, Tom. I mean, this is, you know, this basic fundamental stuff. Blue and Green.
Did you want me to, like, in true silent style, as I'm currently standing in for the Beastman style, did you want me to find something from the 90s?
Nah, you're all right, mate.
We've
already had Kelly Kaniyama as Maid of Nails has covered that with the Royal Blood Hellblazer story by Garth Ennis.
Do you know, I was gonna talk about some Hellblazer, and I've also got that, you know, that awful Mad Cow Disease comic.
No.
You mentioned it about the scrolls. They turn into mad cows, and then they.
Oh, yeah. I thought you literally meant it was called a mad cow scroll kill crew.
Yeah, I don't know what I was expecting from that comic when I saw it for like a couple of quid on eBay, but it was not what was in the comic. But Blue and Green, I read that the other day. And I feel very bad because I...
What is it?
It's a comic.
Who's done it?
Ram V.
Okay.
Have you ever read Black Mamba?
No. Even though we had Ram 5 on...
Oh, is that how you
pronounce
it?
Silence to Astonish. No, I think it's Ram V. We just called him Ram 5 as a funny Silence to Astonish joke.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I still actually haven't got round to reading any of his stuff. Apparently his Swamp Thing was good. I haven't read that yet. You know, I need to read stuff. I need time. but yeah, tell me about Blue and Green by Ram V.
Blue and Green, I think, like, it's just as well the Beast Must Die isn't here, because it's got Dave McLean vibes to it. But no. I don't want to dismiss it as, like, you know, when something has a similar style and you kind of, like, sometimes detracts from it. But it's got all the bits about the style that I kind of like. His
line style, or his sort of painty, or his photography style.
There's no clocks.
You've got three Dave McKeans, haven't you? you got his sequential line work, which I really like. All that stuff in cages. You got his fully painted stuff, and you've got his sort of photo montage.
So there's no clocks. There's no photocopies. I think it is closer to kind of the line and the painting combined. There's a bit that I think maybe there's a couple of things that kind of integrate photos, but again, it's enough of its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all the bits of that I kind of like. The colours are really nice. It's a nice story. I won't ruin it, but it's kind of a film, kind of a film noir type tale. A bit of kind of chasing up the back history, and he comes across this kind of mysterious figure. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
So it's atmospheric. And does it have a story and a plot that engaged you, or you were more sort of like, this is an interesting looking object?
I'm really bad in that. Sometimes with comics, I get with anything. Like, a lot of the time, I'm thinking so much about, like, I think I'm programmed to make art stuff, so I'll see something and it make me think of something else, and then I get distracted from. There's not really anything that I would pull from this myself, but the art style is really nice. It's got a well-paced story. It didn't.
Who is the artist, by the way?
Oh, I should probably say, shouldn't I? they're really good, but I'm not gonna tell you who they are. build the intrigue. Oh, it's by Image Comics, by the way. If you need a,
oh yeah,
because you got to support the indies. also, there's a little known companies like Marvel and DC. I don't know if you heard of them.
Yeah,
I've heard they're struggling at the minute. I hope I don't murder this. Anand RK, does that ring a bell?
No, but
John yeah, no. Pearson is the colour artist. Lettering's also really nice. That's Aditya Bidika. I'm really sorry if this is your name and you're hearing this. it has Tom Muller and Ryan Brewer. It's quite a team.
Sounds like it.
I think it plays with the format in a way that's interesting. Like, I get more caught up in, like, oh, how did they do this, than I do the actual story. But that's a me thing.
But surely you there are things you pick up and read and you think, oh, I don't like that, and then you don't read it. And the fact that you've read this...
Yeah, I think there was a certain one...
All right.
There was one about mad cow disease I did. Did you enjoy the Kill Krill cult?
Scroll Kill Crew. I mean, I haven't read it since it came out.
Okay.
I thought it was quite a cute idea. I mean, it's kind of a ridiculous way of dealing with some Skrulls. is to hypnotizing them into thinking they're cows. And that's kind of an idea. And I think it was kind of a cute thing to pick up.
I think the reason why I don't like
it... I'm not sure I even finished it, though.
I haven't finished it either. It's literally half finished. But I think what wound me up was that I liked that idea of them being hypnotised as cows so much that it wasn't doing the idea justice, and I got really annoyed at it.
Right.
Also, I'll tell you another one. Shall I tell you something that I haven't enjoyed?
Sure.
When I actually reviewed comics, if you can believe that I once did that, judging by the standard of today's performance, I found it really hard to say anything nasty about work because I know both like how much goes into them, and also I could always like pull out something from the process if only for myself. But something I didn't get into was, you know, Scott Snyder. Did you know, is it Witches? A lot of people were into that.
Yeah.
I
read it and I thought it looked nice. I liked the colouring. I liked a lot of the textures in the colouring. Although it was occasionally maybe a bit too splattery and stylized, and maybe was a bit too sort of look at me, I'm the colouring. But on the whole, I thought it was a bit sort of light. Really, I felt like sort of not enough happened.
Well,
and the atmosphere wasn't quite. Thick enough.
I kind of recognised him from that, and actually the series that I didn't like was called Severed. Have you read that?
No.
So I recognise the name.
This sounds like something that came out post removal of sponsorship. Quite possibly.
Oh, do you know what? There's the one redeeming element of this. What I've got is the second printing. I got it as a job lot on eBay. And I like eBay a lot, you may tell. and the redeeming feature is that every issue ends with a letter from the creators kind of begging you to keep reading it. And I liked, right. I like the desperate... of that.
It's honest, isn't it?
It's honest. But the rest of the story is I think it's a very predictable, and I think it's the worst. You know when you've... There's comic... Because I like the old comics, like 1940s stuff. You know when it's so predictable that, like... But it doesn't matter. It's just being fun and stupid. And this is both, like, kind of thinks it's clever, but still being stupid, but not in a... I think it's just... It just feels like a mash of two films that you've seen. Chainsaw Massacre or something like that. And it's got some like quite nice characters maybe, but it just everything feels quite derogatory. I think. Sorry, Scott Snyder. You seem to be doing all right for yourself, so I'm sure you won't mind me, an artist that you've never heard of, saying that he slightly disapproves of one of your comics.
I'm sure he won't mind, but if he did want to. Track you down and make your life hell, where could he find you?
I don't have a website. This is how I lease it.
You're sort of on Twitter a bit, aren't you?
I'm on there. I actually hate the place. I cannot get into it. And
yeah, it is a bit of a toilet. Yeah.
What? Even without the hate that seems to kind of swirl around there, it's... I'll put some artwork up, like, and if I put it on Facebook or whatever, then I get quite good response, and then I'll put it on Twitter, kind of living off the buzz, and it get like one. I think I don't invest enough in Twitter. I think you get. I don't know. I just feel like I'm probably not doing it properly.
So they should find you on Facebook.
Yeah. And, no, don't. I, mean, if, I don't. If you are, if I you do are, not want. I do not Scott want Snyder, anyone contacted me. I do not want. I do not.
If you are Scott Snyder, I would suggest maybe using a pseudonym. before, you know, really laying into Tom.
If you are Scott Snyder, as an apology, contact me to say you're upset, and I will send you PDFs of my work, and you can tell me how shit they are.
That's good.
I'm more than happy to take that, and please don't add me on Facebook because that is just awkward. I already have friend requests, and I feel like I have to research who the people are, and then it just takes a lot.
Yeah.
Find me at a stall at a comic fair. I'll be the one that actually seems to care about you.
A thought bubble?
I don't know.
Have you done thought bubble?
Do you know Danny Noble, who listeners are probably aware of, I think has tried to get us to go to thought bubble together, and then I think it was cancelled or something like that.
There was a pandemic, wasn't there?
Was there? When was this?
Yeah. Did you not hear about that?
No.
All right. No, it was cool.
I think someone tried to tell me on Twitter, but I just assumed it was hate speech.
There's a lot of people slagging off viruses at the moment, and I don't think it's right. You know?
they do a lot of good that people are you becoming like reactionary centralist and apologizing for viruses?
I think that happened to me the other day.
I put something really middle of the road. I posted something really middle of the road, and someone still got apologetic about it. It really annoyed me.
Yeah.
I've been no help to you whatsoever.
I don't care. I feel like this has been the perfect sort of dissolving of what is in many ways a placeholder episode.
Is this your version of the clip show? You know, like 90s sitcom, the clip show. Beast must die. Yeah, we need to renew your contract and keep you on the show.
I've basically read one thing which I have opinions about, and I want to talk to the Beast Must Die about.
You could have told.
And the rest
to me
of it
about
is
it.
Just it's literally just no, because I know he has some thoughts to add as well.
Oh, okay.
But we haven't been able to record those thoughts. But I feel a responsibility to put something out, and I'd sort of booked this evening in my cold car talking to someone, and I thought I should fill it. So
are you clawing at the windscreens like that erotic scene in Titanic where they've just filled up with a?
It is a bit steamy in here now. Yeah. And if my bladder doesn't hold, it'll get even more steamy.
There's just a single watchman with his light just panning over the cars, and he just hits your car.
Yeah.
I'll let you wee if you want. Should I shut up for 5 minutes?
I've got to go in and clean my teeth and go to bed and stuff like that.
Okay.
So I think what we need to do, Tom, is probably somehow wind up this conversation. How do you suggest we do it? Why don't you start by telling me all about your previous experiences of winding up conversations.
Do you want me to just play the sound effect of a gunshot? Would that help? That's a nice clincher. I prepped it in case I needed to make a joke in relation to that Vietnam thing, and then that died so nastily that I've just got it prepped on the side.
Yeah, and then that could be like a cliffhanger as well.
Like,
it'd be like when Rocket Man has, you know, plummeted to a certain death, and then the next week it's like, oh, but it was in no way his certain death, just magically.
He just happened to have something in his belt that he was carrying at the time that helped very specifically with this very particular situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'll play the sound now. You ready?
All right. Well, let's do a countdown, and then that will be the end of this episode.
Okay.
We'll be... a gun has gone off, and we don't know who survived.
I've just realised it's very late at night, and the whole neighbourhood will just hear this sound effect of a gun. But we'll do it anyway, and I can explain that to the police. Are you ready?
Good. Five.
Four. Three, two, one. How was that?
Man, that was so fucking dramatic.